This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Most people know that it is important for their children to know how to read. What they sometimes don't realize is just how early they should start. A program called Reach Out and Read tries to engage children at an early age. The program relies on doctors to prescribe reading to parents for young children even before they enter school. We're going to talk about Reach Out to Read as part of our ongoing American Graduate Project. It's called American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen. And it's a public media initiative to address the dropout crisis supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And here to tell us more about it is Donna White, Deputy Director for the North Carolina Partnership for Children and Smart Start. Welcome, Donna. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you. And good. Also with us is a physician's assistant, Savannah Junkins. Hello, Savannah.
Hello. Thank you.
Tiffany Britt's with us, a mother with two children who participate in the Reach Out and Read program. Hello, Tiffany.
Hello.
Good to have you here. Donna, tell us about Reach Out and Read. How does it work?
Well, let me first speak briefly about Smart Start. We're a network of 76 private nonprofit agencies called local partnerships across the state, and we're led by the North Carolina Partnership for Children. Reach Out and Read is a national program, and in North Carolina, Smart Start, the local partnerships, by being in the community and working with all the other service providers, family physicians, pediatricians, child care providers, and families, they really understand the needs in the community and the strengths and can focus their resources in a way that builds on that. So what we've done in North Carolina through many of the local partnerships is combine this national Reach Out and Read program that, as you mentioned, prescribes reading by the doctor and prescribes developing a habit of reading between the parent and child and offers a book, provides a brand new book that's developmentally appropriate and culturally appropriate at each of the well-child visits. And Smart Start provides additional support to help the doctors and their medical practices actually install this program or implement this program in their practice, help them develop a literacy-rich waiting room because that carries the message that is provided in the exam room out into the reading room, into the waiting room where there are books, small chairs, and hopefully a small table where the parent and child can get together and read. And it's proven through several studies to be immensely effective.
Well, we're going to talk more about the effectiveness of it, but I'm very interested to hear from you, Donna, how you first heard about this and what you thought when somebody said, would you mind, in addition to the other things you do, prescribing reading?
Certainly, it was an idea that intrigued me since I've always, you know, had a love of literature. So I saw the need, especially in the clinic I work in. I do work in a community health center, primarily serving underserved populations in Rocky Mount. So we see great need for improved education, and the resources that parents are able to provide for the children certainly can be missing in many cases. So when they approached me about the idea, I really could see the potential, especially in using the book as an exam tool, actually, for well-child visits. So we're able to use the book that we're given both as a teaching tool for how reading should be performed by the parent with the child, but also gauging developmental milestones for the child. So we hand the book to the child as soon as we see them in the office, and then I'm able to ask them questions. You know, what color is this? This is a duck. What sound does a duck make? So I'm modeling the type of reading, the dialogic reading method that we want parents to use with their children, as well as gauging, you know, does this child know their colors? Are they familiar with the words? And get a sense of where they are developmentally.
I'm guessing that's one of the things that parents who don't realize that you can start as early as infancy to get the habit of reading over. That, I mean, because what they'll say is, well, they don't understand what I'm talking about. But the point is to have a conversation in a way, ask questions and point to pictures and not necessarily get through all of the Three Little Pigs in one sitting.
Absolutely. And we found the importance of actually having a natural conversation between parent and child to be much more efficient than, say, watching a television program, because again, there is the give and take. You are asking the child questions about the pictures on the page, asking them to respond to your questions so that they are engaged in the learning process and the words have more meaning. And we do find, especially for lower income children, that by the time they're 3 years old, they tend to hear on average 30 million less vocabulary words than higher income children. So it's extremely important to focus on those children who are most at risk in order to improve their vocabulary so that they will have lifelong benefit and higher reading levels.
And Tiffany, you have two children who participate in this program along with you. Tell us about your experience.
It seems to have helped my kids out a lot. My two-year-old, she's starting to learn a lot more words than she had originally known as she reads, as I read the books with her. There are some things I haven't even told her what they are. Like, she'll see a castle and she'll know exactly what a castle is just by looking through books and stuff, and she's just figuring it out on her own sometimes. But it really helped her out in the long run because she's learning more vocabulary, and so is the one-year-old.
Was it surprising for you to be in the doctor's office and hear that one of your children is in the 56th percentile in height and the 32nd percentile in weight, and, oh, by the way, go home and read?
Well, I was actually kind of glad, because it gives us some one-on-one mama and daughter time as well, so it gives good family time. I actually really enjoy it.
Donna, tell us a little bit more about the statistics, you know. Donna, if you could explain that, because Savannah says, well, 30 million fewer words that you might be mm-hmm. exposed to. But does that really make a difference in terms of how you're going to do in school or your intellectual development, and why? What's going on there?
Yes. Well, over 90% of brain development occurs before the age of five. And what's interesting is with a peak time for language development in the brain is before the age of one, actually around the 8-9 month level. So the amount of words that children are hearing, whether it's reading, singing, talking, is critical with babies, infants, and toddlers. And there's been incredible amount of research. There was a groundbreaking study several years ago that Savannah mentioned, the 30 million word gap. And those children, the researchers there, Betty Hart and Todd Riesley, they followed up when the children were 8 and 9 years old and saw that there was a correlation between their performance in school at that time and the amount of words that they were hearing when they were two. And there's recent research that's shown that the reading frequency is more important than the social economic class in predicting language skills in school.
So you can break the class barrier if you're doing more reading, then suddenly you jump into the other,
yes,
under the other category.
And there's so much focus now nationwide on third grade reading scores. And North Carolina's Read to Achieve is one example similar to other states that are kind of throwing down the gauntlet at third grade and saying you're either reading on level or you're retained. And we have to start so much earlier to make sure that we're setting children up for success when they're at the third grade. We like to say that third grade is a transition from learning to read to reading to learn. Mm. So it is a critical indicator of later success in reading.
And Tiffany, you've talked about the success you've already experienced, and it's created a closer relationship, as well as, you can tell that your children are picking up more. But what about the time? Where do you find the time to do this?
Well, I do work a lot. I work full-time, and I go to school full-time. So it is kind of hard to find the time, but I always squeeze in at least a good 30 minutes a day with them. Mm-hmm. Reading with them and just sitting down and showing them pictures and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that the time on the other end, and maybe I'll put this one back to you, Donna, the idea that if we can get a better start, we might spend less time later on when we're not getting as many calls from school. Because there is also a correlation between not doing well and behavior, right, and acting out. So all of these things are correlated.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Tiffany mentioned an ancillary benefit of shared reading earlier when she talked about that it gave some mama and daughter time and that she was really enjoying that. That's one of the other benefits of shared reading, is that it is a time where you're close, physically close. Often children are sitting in your lap. You're still. It's a quiet time. Both the parent and child are engaged, and it's fun. You know, reading is fun. There's often laughter, so it's a mutual moment of joy, if you will, for a few minutes every day. You can kind of fall in love all over again between the parent and child, and that parent-child attachment that happens early sets the stage for a healthy social emotional development for the child, for their life. And that we hear so much today about soft skills.
Yeah.
And so reading, again, we need a comprehensive approach. Reading is not the only thing that's important during early childhood, but early literacy is not only helping children learn language and later reading, but is helping with that social-emotional development as well.
Well, Tiffany, I don't know if you're noticing this. I now have a grandson, and I have far less energy than I did when I raised my children. And I'm noticing that if I'm on duty to get to mealtime or to bedtime, reading before we get to either of those moments makes a nice transition, because we settle down a little bit more, and Papa doesn't quite have the energy he did when with your daddy.
Yeah?
Are you finding that?
Oh, yes.
Well, Donna, let me ask you the question. Tiffany obviously likes this idea very much. Are there parents who resent the fact that you're telling them, you know, sort of how to raise their children?
Not at all. I was a little bit concerned that in the age of Kindles and iPads and other technology, that children would not be quite as interested in receiving a book as they may have been in the past. But we find that parents are very grateful for the additional knowledge we're able to give them about early childhood literacy, because, as you mentioned before, most parents aren't aware of the impact that they need to make so early in life in order to improve their children's knowledge base as they go forward. And they've been very receptive to both receiving a brand new book, you know, that in many cases would have been unaffordable for them. I have many patients who their primary library at home is from the books that we've given them. And actually, with our partnership with our local Smart Start organization, we've been able to provide gently used books to all children. So the Reach Out and Read program mostly focuses on 6 months to 5 years. We give a book at each well-child visit. We've actually been able, though, to, through other private donors and through our Smart Start partnership, been able to give every child who enters the office a book. Even my adult patients who may bring their grandchild to the office leave with a book, so that we are making sure that, especially in a very at-risk population, we are at least giving the tools to as many people as we can.
There's just the possibility of leaving your office with Dr. Seuss and not Field & Stream magazine, to me,
yes.
Is one of the most exciting parts of this project. Donna, tell us more about Smart Start, state-funded program, right? How long have you been around?
We've been around. Over 20 years, and focus on a comprehensive early childhood system in each community, and then evidence-based and evidence-informed programs. You know, there's only 2,000 days between the time a baby's born and when that child enters kindergarten, and the experiences during that time have a lasting impact on later learning, health, and success. So our whole focus in Smart Start is setting children up with that great foundation for success. And we have 76 local partnerships across the state that are working to do that in all 100 counties.
It's a state-funded program. You said it's been around 20 years. Tell us an evidence-based. What's the evidence? What has changed in the time since you've been around in terms of education outcomes? Do you have much in the way of statistics?
There have been several studies that have shown the impact of Smart Start, and a fairly recent study out of Duke showed that in counties that had more Smart Start and pre-K funding in the early, when children were young, that there was better performance later in school.
Pre-K funding, K through 12 education, all of them have sort of met with the axe in recent years. What kind of impact have we seen the impact yet, and can we expect impact in the future?
Well, we're certainly seeing poor performance with I think the most recent scores for or the most recent results at third grade reading was 31% were not reading at grade level and by third grade. So we're seeing that they're we're not achieving the educational gains and outcomes that we want. It has to happen throughout the whole continuum of the lifespan, and starting as early as prenatal, if possible, and then early infancy, and continuing on through school. So it's not just the school issue; it really is a birth through college issue.
It's a long pipeline, but if you interrupt the pipeline now, you pay a big price later on.
Absolutely.
Because it does correlate with behavior, and then we can correlate it with crime and all sorts of much more expensive.
Right. Impacts on crime and jobs and economic security.
How about Smart Start funding? Where are you and have you – what's your budget like and has it been cut?
We have seen some dramatic cuts over the last 3 years. We lost 20% 3 years ago and then smaller cuts the last couple of years. And so we're significantly lower than we have been. We're close to $150 million currently. Sounds like a fair amount of money, but when you're really focusing on early childhood comprehensive systems in all 100 counties, it's far below the need.
Tiffany Britt, let me get back to you and ask you about the program that you're a part of and whether you would recommend it to others.
Yes, I definitely would. I think it's a really good idea, and I would recommend it to anybody.
Do your kids now, do they resist reading? Because there is all this other, you know, kind of great gadgetry around that can be sometimes more exciting. Is it hard for you to get them to settle down and read?
Sometimes. It just depends on how hyper they are at the time. Sometimes they'll sit down with me, and sometimes they just don't want to.
Kind of wander off. Well, I want to thank you all for being on the program. Tiffany Britt, a mother with two children who participate in the Reach Out and Read program. Donna White is Deputy Director for North Carolina Partnership for Children and Smart Start. Savannah Junkins is a physician's assistant. Thank all of you for being on the program. So good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. Our website is stateofthings.org. Our producers are Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, Sean Nguyen, and Megan Mottaferri. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.